Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
My name's Chris Lambert.
And my name's Travis Bean.
Welcome to Film Colossus.
Your guide to movies.
You, the one with that smile. Yeah. Come over here for a while. Hey, girl, do you hear what I say? I don't have time to be waiting all day. Just believe that it's not all so wrong.
Ooh, you put a little pizzazz on that.
Yeah, I did a little finger guns. I guess you can't see it, but I did do finger guns.
Razzle dazzle them. Today on this episode, we're doing a deep dive into everything, everywhere, all at once.
Now, the burning question is, can we talk about everything, everywhere, all at once?
There's only one way I could imagine if we had like supreme editing skills. This is where we'd layer in like, I start on one sentence, you start on another sentence, I start on a third sentence, you start on a fifth sentence, and yeah. It just all collides into one vocal cacophony.
Here's my pitch, that every single year on February 22nd, or I guess February 23rd, that's just when the episode will release, we talk about this movie, and then each year we release the episode, but the episodes are just piled on top of each other.
That would be amazing.
It would be unlistenable, but like courageous.
We are breaking new ground in the podcasting world. Are we trailblazers?
All right. We'll release the episode with just like the lone audio too, but like we're also going to release the layered audio.
I would love that.
So you can listen to whatever one you want.
Could you imagine somebody listening to like an hour long episode that's just complete garble?
I mean, I think we're that likable and cool. So, I mean, yeah, I could picture a lot of people doing it.
Maybe not most. I love your confidence. So for Everything Everywhere, this is one a lot. You know, sometimes when we're doing deep dives, it's a movie that we both are seeing for the first time. Other times we're returning to films and... Mm-hmm. This is one that we're returning to, and it's going to be a little controversial, I imagine, unless there's been like a huge shift, because we got some flack in 2022 because each of us saw this movie and weren't thrilled with it.
I mean, to say like we weren't thrilled with it is... this movie's so popular and so beloved, like it's the most popular movie ever. On Letterboxd. Like, people just absolutely adore this movie. So to be anywhere below that is controversial in and of itself.
Yeah. We're like the people, what was it? Armin White was the first one to give The Dark Knight a negative review.
Always, yeah.
And it's like we're kind of in that territory with this movie. It's where I feel like when I first saw it too, because I saw it in theaters. You saw it when it hit video release, right?
Yeah, as soon as it was available, I was like, well, I got to see this movie everybody loves.
I think I was in the point where I didn't know everybody loved it when I watched it, and I was kind of taken aback in the aftermath of being like, oh, everybody loves this?
Yeah, right.
I remember coming to Twitter and making like a bold, like, ugh, and all these people were very, very upset with me.
Yeah. I guess, like you said, like I watched it once it came out on streaming. So like it had already had the hype and everything. I don't even know if I watched it right away. It might have been like a few weeks. But by the time I watched it, it was the most popular movie ever on Letterboxd. So like I went into it with that energy. And like even friends I knew who aren't even into that movies were recommending this movie to me. It's like one of those movies. So it's going to be interesting to talk about my history of this, because Chris, I do have something to reveal to you.
What? No.
I enjoyed it this time.
No!
So now you're alone.
God. I thought this might happen.
I got to tell you, I absolutely, positively did not think anything like this would happen. Like, I think just my reputation, I don't have a reputation. Reputation to like the three people who know how I am about movies. Like, I'm just somebody who always seems to go against the popular opinion. Like, I don't plan that, and trust me, I don't like it. I definitely don't like being on the outside of like what everyone likes and hates. But this time around, it's tough. I feel like me talking about my relationship with this movie is going to just end up being like a therapy session or something, because like I do have a lot of the same problems with this movie that I had the first time, but this time around, I don't know what it was that I just kind of, God, I can't believe I'm saying this, because I'm not usually this way with movies, but I think everyone's love for it like kind of infused me a little bit. Like, I saw the movie a little bit differently than I did the first time. Like, I think the first time I saw it, I don't want to go as far to say like I was a different person, because like it wasn't even that long ago, but I kind of was a different person. Like, I have changed a lot in the past year, and I might have gone into the movie with a little bit of a grudge, like not wanting to like its quirky humor, like wanting to think its message isn't that deep and is actually kind of empty, like just annoyed that everyone loves this but hates something dumb and fun like Morbius. Like, it was all that kind of stuff was happening, and I think I just kind of carried that energy into it, and maybe didn't give it a fair shake. But this time around, like I said, like I still had problems with it that like I recognized from before, but the energy of it, like the optimism of it, just the general good message, it kind of overwhelmed me. And even the moments where it wasn't as good and like wasn't hitting the points I wanted to, it was kind of winning me over the whole time.
You sap.
I know. Ever since I had a kid, I've just become a sap.
You had a kid when you saw this the first time.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
But
she was fresh.
Yeah, right. You still were getting into dad mode.
Oh, man.
When I was watching it the second time, I knew this was going to happen.
Wow.
It was just that thing of like looking at the movie and being like, there's a positivity to the movie and like a kindness to the movie that Travis is going to like kind of love this time.
Yeah, because usually my problem, like anytime I don't like a movie these days, even if like I just flat out think it's kind of empty or it doesn't work or it's just like very mediocrely done, like if it doesn't have an ugly message, then I'm usually okay with it, which is why I really hated movies like Tar and The Menu and The Gray Man. Like, I just couldn't really ever get past like inherently what they were and what they represented. But Everything Everywhere All at Once, like, it's so good. Like, even the moments where like I think its message is just like, ugh, like that's a bit of a misfire, like, oh, you're trying to do too much, like it's trying to do too much of a good thing, and I can forgive that.
Yeah, it's the positive charm that this movie has.
Yeah, so we can get into all the different things, because I do think there are some things in the movie that could have been improved or didn't have quite the impact it purported to have.
Well, so we talked a bit about like expectations going into it. Had you watched, so it's a movie by the Daniels, Daniel Kwan and Daniel Shiner. Mm-hmm. Had you watched their other movies?
I thought you were going to ask if I've watched their music video.
Oh, well, yeah, music video and like, I guess it's one other movie. This is their second movie.
I have not seen Swiss Army Man, no. We were at Sundance, I believe, though, when it came out.
Was it at Sundance that it premiered?
Maybe it didn't premiere there.
No, yeah, you're right. It was 2016. We were there.
Yeah. No, I have not seen Swiss Army Man, but I had seen the Turn Down for What video only because you made me watch it.
Yeah, did I make you watch it earlier? Like,
I think it might have been in Iowa when you made me watch it.
Okay.
It could have been after that, though. I remember we were together, so maybe we were at a film festival or something.
It makes sense. Okay, so I got to interview the Daniels in 2016 ahead of Swiss Army Man coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I watched it. Maybe I watched it before that, just like randomly. But I definitely would have watched it in preparation for that interview. And I just remember thinking that music video is one of the most inventive and bizarre things I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And I really appreciated you showing it to me because I'm a big fan of music videos. My wife and I, we watch a lot of them. And that one just kind of catapulted to like, okay, this is like one of those surreal, strange experiences you never get to see in music videos.
Yeah, it's, I mean,
it's a lot like Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah, you can see the nugget of like the core concept or the core like stylistic premise of Everything Everywhere in the Turndown for What music video.
Yeah, right.
And it is like, right, like multi-level, like each apartment's like a different
multiverse.
Multiverse, yeah. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, and it has like, it's really goofy and ridiculous and like sometimes merges into the side of like crude, you know, but like it never loses its charm. Like I feel like that's what these guys have going that is really unique, is like it can sometimes be vulgar and like something your mom would be like, oh, turn that off, but at the same time you're kind of like 5 seconds later like, all right, it's funny, like we like it.
Well, when I interviewed them, they were so nice, like so intelligent, interesting, kind. I mean, most of the filmmakers I've had the opportunity to interview were like cool, like,
yeah,
I think,
right,
which is nice.
Like, you talked to Nicholas Winding Refn, like that dude's just like cool.
Yeah, yeah. And he was cool. Yeah, I mean, his glasses were cooler than anything.
That's
that
what
I
I'm saying
owned.
He's just like a cool guy.
Yeah. I'm just laughing because that interview, I thought I was getting like a one-on-one interview and it ended up being like a round table interview. So yeah, it was like Nicholas Winding Refn sitting in like a weird, like chic Austin hotel room, but it's a little too chic, and to the point where like it feels almost like the designer sneezed out whatever was in the room rather than it being like, I don't know, it was just a little strange. And then it's like six of us asking him questions, and one person I think asked a question that lasted like 5 minutes. And it's just, we had 20 minutes total, and this one person just asked a question that was a fourth of the time that we had.
I feel like Nicholas Winding Refn would appreciate a five-minute question.
I can't remember if he did or didn't. The one question I got to ask him was about the use of red and blue in both Only God Forgives and Neon Demon. And me being like, oh, is this a way of like visually connecting the two movies? Like something like out there. And he's like, I am colorblind and those are the colors that I can like appreciate on screen. So that's it. I was like,
that's a dope answer. And
it was a good answer, but it's one of those things where I was just like, I wish I would have known that. Like now I just feel stupid.
Yeah.
But when I got to interview Daniels, it was, they'll probably never listen to this episode, right?
Probably not.
I hadn't watched Swiss Army Man when I interviewed them. I was asked by somebody that was working at like the PR company to just come in and do the interview because like somebody else had canceled last minute. So they're like, please, like, you know, I don't want to leave them hanging. Can you come do the interview? So I just had to pretend that I watched this movie for the whole interview.
Oh, wow.
And ask questions about a movie that I hadn't watched.
Wow.
And answer, like respond in a way that made them feel like I had watched it. But it went well. Like, they seemed really happy with the interview. Like, we got into a bunch of other concepts and ideas. We were even talking a little bit afterwards. Like, they were just very, like, they were guys that I was immediately rooting for
Right.
in the aftermath of that interview.
Well, they might have an Oscar soon.
I know, which is why I felt bad when I watched this and was like, oh, I don't like it. Because I really like them. And I do think that their style is very unique and like awesome. But I was...
The Oscars, it's all bullshit, right? Like, it's the whole idea of awarding like the best in quotes is like so silly that you just want whoever wins to be a good person. So like, fuck yeah, they should win.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be happy for them. It'd still be another thing where I'm like, I don't think the best picture won, but I'd be happy for them. Daniel Kwan and I even have the same birthday.
Oh wow, you should have brought that up.
I wish I had known. I definitely would be like, hey, we're birthday.
Like, we're birthday bros. Okay, so what do we want to talk about with this movie?
Yeah, so we kind of went in a little fresh. Like, we were familiar with their concepts, go into the movie. Okay.
Are you talking about this watch or the first watch?
I guess first watch, second watch. The thing for me on the first watch was just... I was very emotional when it finally got to like the cathartic climactic.
Yeah.
When Evelyn has her like breakthrough of awareness of how she's been treating Wayman and Joy and what kind of generational trauma she's experienced and has it processed. Like, I cried so much, but leading up to the point of me crying, I was slumped in my seats from just being so kind of bored by everything that was going on. And I thought with the second viewing that maybe that wouldn't happen again, but I found myself just like even more bored by the stuff I already found boring the first time. And yeah, then still crying a lot at the emotional stuff.
I'm getting a strange picture of you as somebody who's bored by something yet very, very emotionally moved by it.
I am so easily... It's so easy for me to like feel the vicarious emotions that people feel, to where it's like we were watching a South Park episode the other night and I started crying because like Kyle was really sad about something. Or no, Kyle's friend, he was sad throughout the episode, and all of his friends show up at the end and were like, hey, are you okay? Like, let's go play outside. And I was like, that's really nice. That's all that he wanted. So I cry at everything.
I cry all the time too. Like, I was looking at my Letterboxd account and like looking through the movies. I was like, Lord, I've cried at the last like 7 movies we've watched. And I think it would be a fun thing to do in this show. We keep track of how many times we cry at a movie. So do you want to go back through these movies really quick and see if we cried at them?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, Megan, did you cry?
I did not.
I don't think I did, but there were moments that were really good, you know?
Yeah, I may have teared up, but I don't think like a tear fell from my eye.
Okay. The Batman?
No.
No, not me either. Knock at the Cabin?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, Everything Everywhere at All at Once. I think I might have cried the first time, but again, cynical Travis won over, wasn't really prepared to like the movie. This time, I cried quite a bit.
Did you fight it, or were you like...
No, pretty much, like, I'm with you. Like, whenever somebody's feeling something heavily, like, maybe it's just because I'm a little more in tune with my emotions, like, in the past few years, like, taking therapy and just kind of like confronting myself a lot more, and then like having a kid makes you think about all that stuff. Like, I just think anytime now, like, I see somebody going through something that represents even a little bit of a hint of something I've gone through, I'm like, that's me. Like, I get it. I'm crying too.
Like, yeah, I feel exactly what you're feeling. And I like it. Like, I think it's cathartic. I like that I can connect to stories, like, both good and bad. My wife sometimes worries. She's like, are you sad? Like, did that make you sad? Are you okay? And I'm like, no, it's just like, I'm happy for them and I'm crying because I'm happy for them.
Yeah. I mean, definitely the character thing, like, obviously, like, if you're connected with a character that makes you cry. But I mean, I told you about Magic Mike's Last Dance. Like, I was crying at these strippers dancing on elderly women. Like, there's just something about that image, like the fact that you never see like an elderly woman in this kind of position in a movie, like combined with like Mike taught them how to do this dance. Like, there's just something to the art of that scene, like the aesthetic of it, like the energy of it. Like, at this point, when movies do that kind of, just basically anytime a movie does something really, really, really well, and like it's, the message is coming at me full force, like even that'll make me cry.
Yeah, you feel like kind of the build up and the catharsis of everything.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of a big part of it for Everything Everywhere All at Once. Like, obviously there's a lot of character stuff going on, but I get just like the general fervor of the movie, like the confidence it had and all of its dumb humor. Like, I don't know, I just found it kind of moving, and I think that kind of contributed to any moment where like I would start crying, like the tears like just came flowing out because of all of it.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Well, there's something very powerful whenever you have like a story that waits to flip a switch. So in Everything Everywhere, it's, we know Wayman really wants like love and affection from his wife. He wants her to like be open with him, connect with him. He's not trying to divorce her because he really wants to divorce her. He's trying to wake her up. And with Joy, she just wants a mother who's like caring and processing and makes her feel loved and wanted. And the characters are so kind of one-dimensional in their needs.
Mm-hmm.
And Evelyn is so pure in her inability to give that, that when it finally happens, when she finally like is kind to her husband, when she's finally kind to her daughter, there's so much power there, because I think that gets at everything that we all want. We all crave some kind of thing that we're not getting, whether it's just in life in general or from people that we care about or something. We all have that kind of, we can commiserate, and there's something really powerful about that sense of seeing these other people get this thing that they want and having it be so open and obvious and powerful in that way, that I think is one of the reasons why this movie resonates with so many people. And I mean, whether it's the parent-child thing, which a lot of people have strained relationships with parents, and I think kind of can extrapolate what's going on with Joy and Evelyn to their own life. And there's either something cathartic and they wish that they could get this, or something cathartic in that it just reminds them of like the positive times that they have had or breakthroughs that they've had, which is really like nice. So I get why the movie's like so resonant with so many people.
Yeah, I think that simplicity is really key. Like, I was thinking about how like there's a bunch of therapy shit going on right now in like movies, you know, like Jonah Hill had his movie on Netflix, Jason Segel's in that series with Harrison Ford. I still don't even know what that is, but like they're just leaning into like people are into therapy now. And the whole movie kind of is a therapy session, like somebody having a breakthrough, like realizing something about themselves. But if you kind of look past like all of the chaos going on in the movie and kind of just break it down to what the movie's about, like you just described it, somebody learning to be nice to their family. Like something as simple as that, that you don't realize that you don't do that well, like that can be monumental for you to realize that like a simple shift and pivot in your life can lead down all these new avenues and fix all of these relationships. That's what really struck me about the movie this time is just the simplicity of it and some of the simple statements it makes that really have resonated with me lately. Like when Waymond, or the guy from the Alphaverse, says like, you're not good at anything. Like, that's why you're perfect. Like, I think that's lovely because like, to me, that's something I had to, I mean, that might sound a little bit pessimistic, but like in my mind, realizing I wasn't like this pressure to be extraordinary, I think really puts people in a corner sometimes and makes them feel small that they didn't achieve something great. Would really like you just being a good person, like being good at the things you're good at and never being extraordinary or anything, like that's not so bad. Like that you can live a great life doing that. If anything, you could probably maybe live a better life without all this extra pressure on yourself. The idea that life is meaningless, that like things don't mean anything, and accepting something like that allows you to just like embrace what's around you and find the beauty in what's around you. Like, I feel like there's so many little statements like that mixed throughout that I just kept connecting to and were hitting me. Maybe my big problem with the movie though is that like it's so chaotic and so over the place and sometimes hits the nail on the head a little bit too hard that it sort of saturates the message a little bit.
Yeah, I think on the second watch, that was kind of the thing that jumped out to me, what you're saying about Evelyn being told that because she wasn't good at any of those things but tried all of them, That's why she's kind of Alpha Wayman's like chosen one. Like, I think you're the one, because he says she created all of the other Evelyns, right, who are good at these things, and that it's kind of the butterfly effect of her not being great at any of them. And the way that you see her call on each of these little skills in a way and incorporating them into these moments that help her work through this, it's like, yeah, they may not be the thing that makes you into a movie star or that makes you this like wealthy, popular, mastery person, But each of these little experiences that you've had, you find ways to incorporate them into your life that help you problem solve, that help you make it through to something else, and they end up being important pieces and parts to you living like the best version of the life that you can live. And there's something like, it's not a waste. It was actually like time well spent is a very nice message.
Yeah. I mean, the movie's all about mindfulness. Like, mindfulness is the ability to just block out all the bullshit, really, and like be in the moment and actually think about what you're thinking about. Like, it's this really complex way of, it's not complex, actually. It's very simple, but it's so complex given like the culture we live in, and it's just like the chaos constantly going around us and everything we're told that we have to like and do and get good at. The ability to like be mindful and be in the moment feels fucking impossible. And this movie does a great job of visualizing that struggle.
I think my favorite aspect of the movie is the dynamic between the bagel and the googly eye.
I want to hear you talk about this, because like, as much as I like that as like a quirk of the movie, I can't say I've thought too deeply about like what it means, you know?
Okay, so I feel like I haven't seen them talk specifically about this phrase, but there's an idiom that talks about like, if you have everything, you have nothing. Mm-hmm. And it's just the idea that the more that you start to have, sometimes the less that it feels that you have.
Sure.
So you know, if you have 10 really good friends and you're able to like spend time with them or keep up with them versus 100 friends that you're trying to like keep up with, how much time can you really start to spend with each one of them? and really like maintain the relationships. Or, you know, if you have a house that's like a 30 room mansion, how much of the house are you really using, or do you feel like is actually like part of the place that you're living? It's the same thing with hobbies, right? If you're trying to spend 2 hours of free time practicing 10 different hobbies, are you really developing any kind of relationship with that hobby versus only having one or two? So the idea of like having everything or access to everything and that leading you to a point of nothingness, and how that relates to joy or Jobu Tupaki, is I think a really fascinating concept that then leads to how do you visualize this? It's a film.
Yeah.
You have to make this thing external. You have to give it like a form. And I like the idea that because they already had the concept of everything, they suddenly joke about an everything bagel.
Sure.
And the fact that, you know, the everything bagel has everything on it, and you know, that relates to the idea of like everything being overwhelming. They did talk about that in an interview, like the idea of like the everything bagel was tied to the concept of like everything and nothingness and nihilism. So it was a joke that they then decided like, no, actually this is a good like representation. It fits the tone. It's funny, but it's serious. And they talked about like black holes, and that everything has a point of becoming a black hole if you like give it enough compression. Mm-hmm. And they thought it was funny if like it was an everything bagel. So I really like just the concept of the everything bagel and how that ties into the idea of like everything, like having nothing, everything everywhere all at once. Yeah. I think that's a smart call in general.
Yeah.
But here's the fact,
I got to say though, my problem with it before you move on is that everything bagels are delicious, and they are more delicious because they have everything on them.
Right. But what if they had more?
You know? That's true. If you started throwing like turnips on there, like, yeah, eventually you're going to get out of control.
Yeah, it's going to reach a point of just, nope, shouldn't have done that. Yeah. Oh, God. A nice shaved turnip base that sticks to the bagel by way of maple syrup.
And it's delicious.
My Jewish heart is starting to hurt just at the idea of a turnip bagel. It's just, doesn't feel right.
Because the turnips or the bagels?
Turnips on the bagels.
Okay. I didn't know if turnips were a Jewish thing. I mean, I know about bagels.
I don't know if they are either. But a turnip bagel, I can confidently say, is not.
Okay, good.
They should not be
mixed. I'll be the first one to make it then.
Now, a gefilte fish bagel. No.
Oh, boy.
So you have this like bagel that, you know, it's a dark bagel with a light in the center. Mm-hmm. And it's representing this nothingness. And then you have the googly eye, which is the whites with a dark pupil in the center. Mm. They're actually inverse images.
Yeah.
And I love that the fact that they're mirrored and have the opposite, like the everything bagels, negative nothingness. The googly eyes, like positivity, joy, kindness. So you get the opposite energies when these things have the similar composition of like a larger circle and a smaller circle, but the opposite color schemes, and the way that even ties into the yin and yang symbol, the classic like Chinese philosophy of the yin and yang, and the idea of the opposites being part of a whole.
Right.
So the black and white aspects of the yin and yang actually, even though they're antithetical or opposite to each other, actually create like a whole circle, and how that relates to like hot and cold, like positivity and negativity, light and dark. We really do see in nature and in life the way that these things that usually are opposite to one another like share a relationship and share a dynamic. And I think that there was something kind of beautiful about, and this was something I picked up on the second watch as well, that Wayman's positivity in and of itself wasn't the answer. Like, he had been positive for years and it hadn't healed Evelyn. It hadn't like saved Joy. It was only when he gave in to his negativity in a way and reached for the divorce, that it kickstarted Evelyn to go somewhere. And it's the same thing with Joy, that she's been in this negative place for so long and is ready to end things, where like a positivity that she can bring, or like the flair that she brings to things, also like helps, or like that negativity isn't the end all be all.
Mm-hmm.
And then Evelyn's kind of in the middle of being very defensive and rejecting both like the positivity and the fear, and just being like completely shielded
right
from her emotions. So I really love that the movie kind of took that yin and yang perspective, rather than saying like negativity is bad and there's no place for it and positivity is the only way, and saying that no, we're people that contain both the positive and the negative. And when we're all negative, that's not good. And when we're all positive, that's also not realistic. And when we refuse to be either, that also is a problem. You need to be this person that embraces both like the yin and the yang, the positive and the negative, and work through that stuff.
Yeah.
So I really liked that concept and how it was visualized through the bagel and the googly eye and the inverse like visuals that they present with both of those.
See, this is the kind of analysis you get on Film Colossus, by the way. yeah, I like that. Like, so the Alpha versus Waymond is an exaggerated version of the positive Waymond, because like Waymond's always trying to be positive, and this Alpha version of him is like, he thinks Evelyn is Neo from the Matrix, you know, like you're the one, like you can achieve something like so fantastic. And then on the other side, like all the way over, like Agent Smith is Jobu Tupaki, who is just this like really intense negative figure, like seeing all of the dismay in the universe, and that presence that, you know, when you're feeling down, when you're feeling depressed, when you're having any sort of existential crisis, that whatever force is pulling you further in that direction and making you feel lower and lower and kind of steep in it, like she represents that. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Two ends of the spectrum, but then also like they both need to like have some growth on their own.
Yeah, for sure.
Nice. So like, I think that's my favorite part of what the movie was doing on like the thematic level.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely like all that stuff. I will say, I mean, this was the thing that I really latched onto the first time I watched it, where I was like, this movie is like not as good as people think it is. And I still kind of feel this way. I think it's the only thing holding the movie back from becoming like great is that all the stuff we're talking about and all the things it's doing, like, obviously you want movies to show, not tell. And this movie does a lot of showing for sure. Like all the crazy shit, the bagel, the Evelyn, like fixing all these people and their mental struggles or whatever they're dealing with. Like it's cool. And it's like, it's literally showing people like make changes in their life. But one thing this movie does that I'm just like, always kind of frustrates me when movies do it, is like it leans on the telling a little bit too much in a way that it ruins the aesthetic a little bit for me. Like if you think about a movie like Spirited Away, like the whole movie's aesthetic is this girl who gets separated from her parents and has to grow up. Like she has to learn what it's like to be on her own. Like everything she goes through on that journey is the aesthetic. Like it represents something. It doesn't need to be like laid out thin for us every time. Like she has like a change or some mental revelation. Like everything you see her go through is just part of a journey. It's a visualization of a internal journey we go through. Like movies that are really good at doing that, like I tend to latch on to a little bit more. And movies that are just so committed to their aesthetic that becomes just like this vibrating force that like represents the core, like what the human struggle is. This movie, like every time like Evelyn makes a change, every time someone gives a speech that is supposed to turn her another way, like it just starts to feel a little stale to me. Like Joy gives a big long speech, or Jobu Tupaki, and then like Alpha versus Wayman gives a speech, and then Michelle gives a speech, and like her dad even gives a speech at some point, like, and they're all supposed to represent like these turns in her character. Like, I just like, I'm so sick of movies do it. Like, to me, this movie could have done all of that, like had all of that commentary without needing to say it and just going through the motions it actually went through. Like, obviously that's harder to do and a little tougher to like actualize and like make people realize what your commentary is. But the way they chose to do it to me is just like, I kind of start rolling my eyes whenever that stuff happens. So like, as much as the movie was connecting, it was more like the first two thirds of the movie connect. And then the last third, I'm just kind of like, ugh, like, man, this is kind of a bummer.
I'm on the opposite side. The first two thirds are where I'm just like, ugh. And then it's the last third where I'm like, all right, like, this is the catharsis I was, like, I'm enjoying.
So you don't think it was heading towards that catharsis already?
I do. I just think it's a slog to get there.
Okay, so when you say you're bored by it, do you just mean, like, visually, like, the energy of the movie and everything? Like, you're not into, like, the humor, you know?
A little bit. It's more that I find it a touch, how do I want to say it? I was into the, I think when it starts to lose me is when it starts, which is weird, like getting into a lot of the action elements, because they start to feel kind of like hollow to me. Like, they're just things that are kind of like thrown in for the style of it, more so than being completely necessary. And I'm saying that with a bit of hesitation, because they do show the fact that like Evelyn's fighting for something, like struggling for change, and like watching Wayman fight is something that like makes her feel good. Like, you can definitely make arguments for like what that means and represents. It's just after a while there were so many sequences that kind of just left me going like, we're really dragging this out. You know what the real issue is? The fact that I felt like from the very beginning of the movie I knew what the arc would be. In fact that, like, okay, Evelyn is very like bitter, and her husband's trying, her daughter's trying, so this is essentially just a long story to get her to change, and then things will be good. And so everything that was happening that was continuing to set up the character dynamics and the relationship dynamics, I was sitting there going, I get it, I get it, I get it, I get it, which makes that first two thirds just feel very elongated to me. That's, and just kind of leaves me
That's an interesting insight I've gotten from you from this show so far. Or Knock at the Cabin episode, you were dismayed, like you were let down a little bit because immediately you understood that the four guys represented the four horsemen, and to you that takes away some of like the suspense, the energy of the movie. Whereas, like, I just don't think I'm that way at all. Like, I kind of like when a movie lets me know what it is and then, like, goes down all the paths that explore that. Now, on that end, I could see the argument of, like, well, all the paths weren't that interesting to me. Like, sure, that's one thing. But it sounds like to me that anytime you know what a movie's doing, you're kind of let down.
A little bit. It's more so that I just want to be taken. I want it to go in directions that I didn't see coming. And that doesn't mean that a movie where I see what's going to happen can't be exciting still. Like, you talked about Spirited Away earlier. When she gets separated from her parents, you kind of expect, like, okay, she's going to go on a journey and find her parents.
Yeah.
So it's not like there's a big surprise in terms of like where the story goes, but how we get there is so dynamic and interesting that I'm kind of like swept up and swept along, where with this, it felt like everything felt a little superficial to me in terms of the premises. Yeah. Like, not the emotional stuff. Like, of course, there's a lot of depth between, like, Evelyn, Wayman, Joy, even Gong Gong. But it's all the stuff with, like, the multiverse and mm-hmm. with the combat. And I keep comparing the fact that it's, like, the Matrix mixed with Cloud Atlas, but not doing the Matrix, which is with as much... like world building, and not doing Cloud Atlas with as much world building. Like, I feel like it's the cliff notes of those two movies, and I'm not really getting like enough of any of it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I totally see that with you, because I definitely think that's a huge difference between you and I. Like, you love like big worlds, like full of these twists and turns, and like presenting all these new angles and new kinds of characters and new like. Not that I don't like that, but I don't think I have the same like guidelines that you seem to have. Like, you really want a movie to like take you down like crazy paths and like completely surprise you. And like, I feel like as I get older, like I kind of just become the opposite of that. Like, I like when movies are simple. I like when, and not simple in the sense of like, just be about one thing to be done, gosh, you know, but like, just like, they have what they're about. Like, they have like an aesthetic they're going for. They have an idea, and like they're kind of just fully committed to that. And the narrative itself, like the plot, the places it goes, like that stuff kind of doesn't matter to me. Like, I just need any path they go down to hit. I need it to be fully part of the aesthetic and not ruin the aesthetic at all. Like, I need it all working together. Whereas like, I think you, I mean, you're a novelist, like you write stories, like you're into that a little bit more, whereas like, I just love the beauty of like the art. Like, I just like pretty things. Like, I want to see it like work well. And if it's working well enough, like, and it's making me feel emotional, like that's kind of all I need.
Which can be nice. I there's definitely moments where I can feel some of my, like, a movie charms me to the point of just right. being like, yeah, I, like, the characters are working, like, the story's simple, but, you know, this is nice. Like, I'm enjoying the charisma that the movie has.
Yeah.
But a movie like this, as much charisma as it had, just kind of left me, like, it felt like highlights rather than, like, really digging into a concept. Like, I know what you mean. Have you seen Cloud Atlas?
I have, but I can't say I remember it that well.
I feel like it wasn't something that you loved.
I don't remember hating it like everyone else, but I wouldn't say I loved it.
It's a movie that like has lingered with me. I feel like it wasn't one that I was 100% all in, but that over the years, in terms of like how much world building it did, how much kind of care it took to tell its story, and the scope and scale of the story it told is still like very impressive to me. And I think that's one of the issues, and maybe somebody would say that it's unfair, but when I look at Everything Everywhere All at Once, it just feels so much smaller than Cloud Atlas. And like, I'm right. getting a lot less, but I think it moves at a pace that has more appeal to people, and I get why it's the more popular of the two and the more recognized of the two.
I mean, yeah, I could totally see that. As much as like, I don't think I'm quite in that camp. Like, I need my movie to be like, be moving fast and like cover everything like more efficiently. Like, I can appreciate a movie like Cloud Atlas, but I can totally see why when a movie like Cloud Atlas isn't done well, and maybe that is just the movie Cloud Atlas because everyone seems to hate it, like, it's pretty torturous to watch a movie like that, in my opinion. Like, way worse than something like Everything Everywhere All at Once that is, like, chaotic. Like, oh my gosh, it's trying to do too much, but, like, at least it's getting through a lot of ideas and, like, presenting something to me. So I could see why people would. Yeah, you're totally right.
Yeah, yeah. But I definitely prefer just the world building in The Others versus Everything Everywhere?
I mean, the world building's great as long as it's getting to something, for sure. But I guess your argument is that in Everything Ever All at Once, it isn't like the amount that the world's building isn't contributing enough to Evelyn's struggle.
Like, it feels just a little thin to me. Like, it's more, is it this cool rather than is it this necessary? Or is this fully, like, built up in the way that it could be? Like, we're getting a lot of snippets rather than...
Right.
Like, when somebody performs at, like, an award show and they give, like, a medley, or at a concert and they do, like, the medley of songs rather than their full songs, like, I feel like it's the medley.
I don't actually, I'm sitting here nodding my head, like, I don't think you're wrong about any of that. I just don't think that's inherently a bad thing for a movie to do. Like, you could totally make the argument that Everything Everywhere All at Once itself, the way it does it, it does hurt the movie and its message, but I guess I don't feel that way. I feel like the snippets are okay for like what it's going for, what it's trying to accomplish, and like how it's trying to move on to idea to idea, and really just representing the chaos of life and how chaotic it can feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah.
No, I think that's fair, and there's arguments to be made, especially with what we were talking about earlier about each little thing that you had tried to do in your life can come back in a way that's helpful and necessary. Mm-hmm. Like, these weren't just false starts. These weren't just like pointless endeavors. So the fact that we do see all of these like hints of the multiverse without actually getting into anything really serious in like the Alphaverse or anything else, like, it's part of an idea that gives it a little bit of like anchor and logic and purpose. Yeah. Rather than just being like a completely empty thing. It's just, for some reason, the movie just feels so drawn out to me that...
Yeah, that's funny that, like, it is... because it's not steeping in all these subjects like you want it to. It's actually, like, moving from thing to thing to thing, yet it feels, like, very long and, like, very dragged out.
Yeah, a 139-minute movie, like... Yeah. It's a long time for a story that I feel like the main story is just like 20 minutes.
Yeah, so I could definitely see that being a criticism, but for me, that was, again, as long as it's not ruining the aesthetic, and if anything, it's contributing to the aesthetic, like, it definitely doesn't bother me.
Yeah. What, so you're on board now.
Yeah, I mean, I still think, like, part of my, like, I'm not going to use the word reputation again, but like, just like my relationship with movies, like, it's been a little contentious when it comes to like the movie going public in a way I don't like. Like, I want to like all the movies people like. Like, I would love it. Like, I would love to just be part of that community, but inevitably every year, like, you know, I hate Tar, I hate The Menu, like, I hate all these dumb movies that everyone seems to like, and I like all the dumb movies everyone hates, like Morbius, and like my favorite movie ever is Showgirls. Like, I just constantly feel like, I don't think I'm watching movies wrong or anything, but like part of me just like wishes like I could be on the same level a little bit as other people. So like going into this episode, I watched Everything Everywhere at Once this morning, and I kind of had like a heavy feeling going into it. Like, I wasn't super excited about it, A, because like I didn't like the movie and I wasn't excited to watch it again, but B, like, ugh. And then like a few hours later, I'm gonna have to get on this podcast and talk shit about this movie everybody loves. So it was a very strange experience for me to like kind of just be slowly pulled into the movie and really feeling it. And yeah, let down a little bit at the end, like, it isn't doing the things I want, but like at that point, like, I was in, I had cried like a gallon of tears, so like I know I like it. So it was a very strange experience for me all around that I have appreciated.
What's your favorite scene?
Favorite scene? God, I just watched it, so this should be an easy answer. I don't know about a favorite scene, but one thing I will say that I love that the first time, again, the first time I watched it, it kind of annoyed me because I'm a Wai Kar Wai fan. Why am I saying the name wrong? Wai Kar Wai fanboy. Is like that whole aesthetic that's used in the flashbacks when Evelyn's a movie star. Like it looks like Chungking Express or something, you know? Like I just really loved all the interactions they had, just like the mood and feel of it. Like it was just so cool. Like I wanted a whole movie that was just that.
Yeah, there's something really, the contrast is really like striking and like dynamic and cool.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite scene?
I mean, I have to, right?
I have to say, like, I don't know if I would go as far to say as like the action scenes are super well done. Like, I think they're done in more of an entertaining way. But I liked it a lot more this time around. Like, I really enjoyed all the dumb shit they were doing, like the butt plugs. And like the first time around, it kind of annoyed me. Like, oh, they're just trying to be like quirky to the point where it's nauseating. But this time I was kind of like, yeah, it's fun. Like, they're having fun.
They're having fun. I like the end. I like the end where they go back to the tax office and you get to see like when Evelyn like wraps her arms around Wayman's shoulders and kisses him, and you see her like how she acts that moment and how happy he is that he's finally getting this like affection, and that is making me like tear up now just thinking about like the joy each of them have to be feeling in that moment. So I guess like that scene and joy being in the tax office at the end, like I find a lot of catharsis in that moment. So I guess like the very end's my favorite part.
Yeah. It's a great moment.
Yeah.
I will also give shouts out to Jenny Slate, who they make good use of like small players in this movie, like Jenny Slate, the woman who had the dog. And they make a couple Jewish jokes about, which felt weird, but whatever. Apparently she was cool with it. And then Harry Shum Jr., who like I think is awesome. I've always really liked him. He's in the Step Up movies, which is how I really know him. But he's also in like Crazy Rich Asians and oh God, what else is he in? Just every time he's in something, he's just awesome. He's like a ball of energy. He was the chef, the raccoon guy in this movie.
Yeah, Raccoonie.
That was a joke in the first movie and I just like rolled my eyes, but this time like I thought it was really funny.
Yeah, that was one of my like favorite parts of it was the Raccoonie. It is absurd, but it is one of those things again where it's just like, oh, I look at the alternate dimensions in Cloud Atlas and how much time they're given and how much build up and like this is so thin.
Yeah.
But we're supposed to care. Do we care? I guess we care.
That's so funny. It's just so funny to me that you could watch a movie that day that way. Like my mind is not in that space at all.
It's all I ever think about. But yeah, Jenny Slate, it was nice to see her. I remember like seeing Obvious Child and being like, oh, she's going to be in everything. And she's been in like a lot since then, but not a lot of the bigger roles than I expected. So I'm always happy when I see her in something.
Do you ever watch a Kroll show?
No.
Oh, man. She's in a bunch of episodes. You got to watch Kroll show, man.
It makes sense that she would be in a bunch of episodes. I feel like they probably just like crack each other up.
Oh my God. Okay. And gosh, is there anything else in this movie you want to talk about?
Just give a shout out to Jamie Lee Curtis and James Hong and Stephanie Hsu.
I mean, everybody's great in this movie. Like, God. I don't want to sound like a curmudgeon. Like, I don't want to sound like just some asshole who's like negative about everything in movies that you don't ever want to hear from. But Jamie Lee Curtis was going down this path in my mind of like kind of annoying, like the kinds of movies she was doing and like her presence and like what she would comment on. Like, I was starting to like, I was sick of hearing about her, but man, she's great in this movie, and I feel like I've just done a 180 on her. I have to reevaluate everything I thought about her.
Man, I didn't. It's surprising to me that you would have such like strong, strong feelings on Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah,
movie choices.
It's ridiculous. Like I think again, like I've changed a lot in the past year. Like I used to have a lot of. I think I just had a lot of negativity in my life, and it seeped into like the thing I love, which is movies, and I don't like that, and I'm trying to change that.
Well, good. Good. It's I just keep looking. I was looking at her filmography to see if there's anything that she did recently where I'm like, I didn't like that, and I just see Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends.
The Halloween movies had a lot to do with the way I felt.
Yeah, which is just... That's not on her.
No, it's not at all. Like, she's acted her ass off of that. Like, it's her series. She should be in those movies.
Yeah, it's just like the writing... Oof. Fucking failed them so hard.
Yeah, it's rough stuff.
Oh god, she's gonna be in the Borderlands movie.
I mean, she is active as fuck. It's crazy.
Oh, this Borderlands movie is gonna be a little crazy.
Was that a video game?
It was a video game. Okay. That's kind of like Mad Max-y.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's directed by Eli Roth.
Oh, and then I'm in.
This screenplay is by Craig Mazin, who did Chernobyl and Last of Us.
Wow, I can't see Eli Roth and Chernobyl crossing over.
I know. This is going to be...
I'm in.
I'm very curious to see how this will go with Cate Blanchett as the lead.
Hmm. All right.
Okay. Okay. Well, so Everything Everywhere. Well, I'm glad, you know, I'm glad you had a positive response to it all.
Yeah, I feel like this movie kind of forced me to do some like looks at myself internally. Not really just because of like the subject matter. Like I did connect with all that. I would have connected with all that no matter what. But like again, just my relationship with movies and like I don't like not liking a movie people like. So like now I'm happy to like it. Like this is a good feeling.
Are you going to update your article, Why I Don't Like Everything Everywhere All at Once?
Oh, no. I want that to exist. Like, I want that to exist in a vacuum. I will write a new article.
Okay. Okay. Write a new article. How I Came to Love Everything Everywhere
All at Once. Yeah. The sister, the sequel.
Yeah. Maybe that should just be something we do with every movie. Like, we take the opposite view of everybody else with every movie that comes out and then, like, come around. And have like a tearful like, okay, I agree with you all now.
I'm sorry, I was an asshole.
Look, I get it. It sucked. Or it's awesome.
All right, Morbius sucked. I get it.
How could I have ever felt differently?
Okay. So that's it, right?
Yeah, I think that's all for this one.
Okay. Tune in next week. We're gonna be talking about all the movies we've watched. In the past 2 weeks leading up to the episode, I gotta say, Chris, I have not been watching very many movies. You might beat me this time.
I don't think so. I think I've only watched like one. Have only watched this.
Maybe we can't do an episode.
No, we'll definitely. I'll definitely see a couple. I saw one.
Oh, hell,
okay, yeah.
Ooh, what a tease! You saw one.
Yeah, but it's one that. We'll talk about Ant-Man.
Ant-Man. Hmm. Well, if you want to read ahead of time what Chris thought about Ant-Man, you can go to filmcolossus.com. Right, Chris?
Yeah, there's an article there called Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumanium, Bad Writing. Go ahead and check that out.
All right, so that's a tease. Like, Chris may or may not like it. You'll have to tune in next week to see. You can go to Film Colossus where we have all of our movie guides. We're explaining the shit out of movies, guys. Like, you got to see it to believe it. It's crazy. We're doing it better than anybody else.
Yeah. The movie guides are awesome. And then, you know, by the time we're doing the next episode, no, it's going to be a little bit, but going to have some South by Southwest conversations. Ooh. For anybody that's interested in South by Southwest coming up in about a month. I get to be a mentor at South by, so that's exciting.
Oh yeah, nice. And if you want to support the show, patreon.com/filmcolossus, $3 a month. You'll have no ads on the show. That's all we're offering right now, but more's coming, we promise.
More to come.
And okay, that's it. We did it.
Congratulations to us.
We've accomplished so much in the past hour and 3 minutes.
People thought it couldn't be done. Can't wait to do it again next year.
Yeah. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Got a big question to ask. Anything? Do you want to do anything?
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.